If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the love and light of the Supreme One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Ruin and Return or Realization. Ruin or Return or Realization. Your mind determines the result. So if you're ready, let's take a deep breath and just let that energy rise up through you and connect to the divine within. And take another deep breath and bring that energy down to the top of your head from the very, very highest divine positive realms of spirit where you reside eternally, right down into your body. And with the next breath, I want you to ignite every cell of your body with a pure white flame of your holiness, your divine presence. Ready? Deep breath. Fill your body with light. Visualize that light sparking and igniting every single cell. See all the cells of your body in a radiant, white, fiery effulgence. All of your auras become one flame of divinity, the divine presence. That is their true form, beloved. That is you. That is that part that is birthless, deathless, eternal, beyond any modification or change. You are the eternal one. The one that lives forever. So tonight we're going to look at something that really can spell the difference between really realizing yourself in this very incarnation or not. And it takes effort on your part, because it involves a dissolution of the mind. You can equate mind with misery. Everything that troubles you and is problematic in the world can be traced to the mind. So let's look at the inception of this whole thing. Because if you can see it clearly, and while you're looking, consider this a meditation, but place yourself in the position of being the one, absolute, divine, it of itself, the all that is, the Paramatma, the supreme absolute. Place your identity there, because in highest truth, you have never left that. And you remain that still, even though the mind has caused you to identify with yourself as an individual and the many. So the mind has no existence apart from thought. Mind is simply a bundle of thoughts. Therefore, if one has no thoughts, it follows one has no mind. But who is it who has transcended the mind? One who has realized the truth. the Yoni, the Jivanmukta, the Stitapragna, the awakened one, has realized the truth, Satyam. And truth in this instance has a capital T and can never be modified. It is that which remains, the it of itself, without any change or modification. If it changes, it's in the field of samsara or illusion, impermanence, changing. But it can't be called truth. Well, it's a relative working reality, let's say, or working unreality. But it can't be dignified with the true name of satyam or sat or truth. So it's the mind that creates karma and reincarnation. Karma is simply action. The mind determines whether it bears good fruit or evil fruit. But whether the action bears good fruit or evil fruit, you still have to eat of your doings. Your actions produce results, and you alone are held accountable and have to eat the fruit of your action. That leads to rebirth. What re-embodies? The illusion, the ego form, the separated self that you dream you are. So the thoughts, which are also the desires and impulses and tendencies that you carried over from life after life after life, because thought is ineradicable and it follows you. The minute a baby is born, it has a garland of the good and bad thoughts, and consequently actions, of its previous innumerable births and deaths, which, illusory as they may be, still, as long as you identify with the separated self and its mind, you are responsible for the action. That's why the doer has to die. The mind has to be dissolved. Both have to disappear and dissolve in the light of your divine awareness. That's the only destination that's going to end the misery. So the one supreme absolute, it is said in the scriptures, generated the primal thought. Out of oneness arose the thought, I am one, let me become many. And this primal thought gave rise to the light of consciousness. Consciousness requires the recognition of otherness to be conscious of. Hence, consciousness is the very first appearance of the illusion of duality. Consciousness is thus the first thought. Consciousness manifested as light, which became individualized as soul, or jivi, as it's called in Sanskrit. This individual jivi or soul embodied light, embodied as light, and thus is the only uniquely begotten of the Supreme One. This soul is also called Chaitanya, or Christ consciousness, or some refer to it as the divine spark. That divine spark must become an all-effulgence, like our first opening visualization, meditation. You have to become a effulgence, all-encompassing effulgence of divine glory. And when you awaken to your true self, you might have that direct experience of being light itself. So because only the perfect absolute supreme spirit, or Paramatma, is real, The thought of the many is the origin of the illusory appearance of others. All the many manifold forms that are now taken to be real, that you look at when you look out the window, when you walk on the street, when you turn on the TV, all those forms seem to be real and apart from you, don't they? In reality, everything you see on the television is a play of color, light, and sound waves. Yeah, color, light, and sound. So, even the forms you see on television are not really real. So, none of this manifold appearance is real at all. Everything one sees and all of creation is but a play of consciousness. A play of consciousness. Nothing more than that. Nothing is really going on here at all. It is a replay in which we recognize familiar patterns that we have visited before. Creation was completed in the instant that it was given rise to, along with all parallel probable outcomes and realities and universes. Everything occurred in an instant out of time, such as we know it, but appearing in time as creation. So within the illusory appearance of the many came Mahamaya, the great enchantress, which is the beguiling delusion of separation. And thus Maya took up abode as the egoic mind within the individual, or jivi. So Mahamaya is that egoic mind that keeps projecting and projecting is more accurate, difference, separation, things to be afraid of, things to fear, things to dread and both dread and hope for. It's always projecting, either into the future, which doesn't exist, or remembering, which means to reconstruct the past. That's all it does. So Maya, mind, ego, the appearance of illusion, or samsara, are in essence one and the same. And behind the illusory facade of separation and differentiation, the Supreme Absolute remains. Sort of like the Great Oz. So the One is simply the witness. And here's going to be a nice word for you. The witness in Sanskrit is called the Sakshi. S-A-K-S-H-I. The Sakshi. So hello, Sakshi. You're the witness, not the doer. You're the witness. So as witness, the Absolute, it of itself, the Paramatma, is eternal, unchanging perfection. And in highest truth, that part neither creates, preserves, or destroys. It simply is the it of itself. So even it's a play of consciousness alone, which gives rise to the appearance as everything else, including the gods and goddesses, involution and evolution, and all the forms throughout the myriad universes without number. All came to be out of the play of consciousness, all this moving. And so the very awareness of being is lost in the manyness of becoming. When you are associated with a separate self that has to become something, your life is lost in becoming. Your life is lost in becoming. And being is lost in this dream of becoming. When you dream you're the separated self that has to attain, achieve, do, whatever, you're lost. You're not really living. And you're dreaming, you're sleepwalking. So it's the play of consciousness alone, which makes us superimpose upon the oneness a triplicity. We seem to see an individual that's separate from an absolute creator and nature or creation. We see three entities that the spirit of delusion, Mahamaya, has covered our mind with this veil of ignorance. So we see three when there's only one. Why? That would seem like a logical question. Why? The one thought to become the many. And instantly, all arose from that divine resolve and intention, which is called sankalpa in Sanskrit. So thought always creates form at some level, whether it's egoic thought or this primal thought of the one. Yet thoughts or ideas leave not their source. Jesus teaches this in the Course in Miracles very clearly. Everything, including the individualized mind, soul, or jivi that we imagine ourselves to be, remains as God created it, in perfect oneness forever. We're home right now, forever one and merged in the Paramatma, in the Absolute. So it's the beguiling delusion of Mahamaya that fools the individual into taking the shadow play to be real and becoming involved in it and attached to sensory feedback that the mind gives rise to. Sensations are interpretations that the mind places forth, which gives rise to attachment or revulsion. So the mind is composed entirely of desires for phenomenal experience. Desire for phenomenal experience. And that'll put you on the path of return. Because you get to experience this play of shadows and consciousness as long as you want. So it's the Maya that causes the illusion of three entities when one absolute spirit alone exists, and you are that. You are none other than that. Not at the personal, egoic mind state, no, of course not. But in the awakened, realized state, yes, you are that. And those that have realized this truth can very rightly be worshipped and seen as none other than the appearance of God. Which is why people worship people like Jesus and Sai Baba, great realized souls. They're the same as God. They become literally awakened to the oneness of the Absolute Spirit. So Maya takes the form of the ego mind that thinks and has memory, intellect, and reason. The ego mind has memory, intellect, and reason. This is called collectively the Antahkarana. Many of you are familiar with the term Antahkarana, which has also been referred to as the rainbow bridge or the inner instrument of man. But in reality, it's the mind. And the Antahkarana has four aspects, which I've just mentioned. Manas, or mind, buddhi, or intellect, citta, or memory, and ahamkara, or ego. Mind, intellect, memory, ego. You ever wonder why some of you who are initiates and have transcended the mind, through soul awareness. Have you ever wondered why you don't have dreams anymore? Why you don't really remember things? Or if you do, it seems like it was another person at another time. And it's kind of hazy. Because the fire of awareness, that white light we evoked as we began our beginning meditation, integration, that white light is the light of awareness that burns the residual of your doing. As the mind is dissolved in awareness, all the doing also dissolves. Oh, you have a functioning awareness that will bring to mind things that you need to remember to function practically here. I mean, there is a point of time when you can't come back here. You're too enlightened. If you're too awake, too enlightened, you can't appear here. You can't stay here. You disappear into the next higher dimension. But as long as you need to get up in the morning, get your kids to school, drive to work, do traffic, you have to have some memory of practical operative ability, but you don't have to be attached. You don't have to let it run you and beguile you and fool you into thinking what you're doing is actually where it's at, or to allow you to get fooled and all caught up in desire and attachment, or avoidance, the same thing, resistance, avoidance, same thing. It'll bind you to reincarnation. Have to learn to walk the middle path of divine neutrality, which is another word for staying awake, alert, and aware, and observing things for what they are. We have to learn to discern between the real and the unreal, darkness and light, death and immortality. What is sat? What is eternal? What is real? What is just a passing whim of the mind? It's that kind of inquiry that's required as you walk through your daily life, if you want to wake up. So the buddhi, or intellect, citta, or memory, and the ahankara, or ego, are the subtle aspects of the mind. And they are subtle. Just about the time you think you've mastered your mind, it appears in an even more subtle form. So the three names given, that is buddhi, citta, or ahankara, are based on the functions performed by the mind. So when the mind is engaged in wavering thought and those kind of processes, it's called manas, or mind. When the mind is busy in the process of inquiry or discrimination between right and wrong, it's called the buddhi, or intellect. And when the mind functions as a repository of memories, it's called the citta. So citta contains the memory not only of this life, but of all past lives. So when the mind identifies itself with a physical body and assumes the doership of various activities, it is given the name ahankara, or ego. And though the mind is basically one, it thus displays these four varied forms on account of the different functions or roles performed by it. And the way the mind functions can be likened to mono-acting. Like a one-man or one-woman show. The same mind assumes different forms and plays different roles, depending on the needs of the different situations. So the mind alone is the cause of all things. In fact, we're called man because it's the root of the word manusha, which is the Sanskrit name for man or thinker. And the mind, man means mind, and the mind is the thinker, the one who can think. And as a man thinks, so he becomes. This is the fundamental law. The mind, however, is only a bundle of thoughts. Only a bundle of thoughts. And thoughts are important to man because they give rise to actions.
So what we enjoy or suffer in this world are simply the consequences of the actions performed by us. And it follows, therefore, if our life is full of good only, and our actions are good, then we'll have good results. But we also know how we can allow the mind to draw us to ruination. That's why the sakshi, the witness, has to always be observing. Watch the mind. Watch the thoughts. Watch the heart. Watch the character. Because out of that, you will either have ruin and return or realization. Now, there is a level beyond thinking. I don't want you to think that's it. We are just on the very edge of the seashore of a very profound realization, but you have to kind of tiptoe into the water gradually, because it's important that you don't just hear the words, but in the time of your spiritual practice, you develop direct experience. You cannot phone this information in. You can't get it secondhand. You can't get it from another. You have to awaken through direct experience. And we're talking about realizing that you are divine, that you are one with God, that you are indistinguishable from God. In terms of your nature, you're either awake to that, or you're in the process of awakening, or you're sound asleep and you don't understand a word I'm saying. You're probably, going to go off and do something else now, which is fine, until you're really fed up and sick and tired of being sick and tired in this samsara, this illusion field. You get to come back. Until you are really fed up with it, really totally done with it, then you'll have enough hunger to go after what you need to do to realize and wake up. Take some effort on your part. So the absolute Paramatma, that absolute spirit, that true self that you are is beyond thought. The nature of Paramatma is being. Or eternal existence, which is another term for being. Omnipresence, omniscientiency, which is a fancy word for knowing everything that is to be known everywhere at all times. And all-pervasive bliss, ananda, which is an orgasmic form of ecstasy. That erupts in every pore and cell of your being. But it's very still and silent. It burst out of silence. Silence. Stillness. Presence. Spaciousness. All define the same state. Which occur naturally as one awakens beyond thinking. To awareness. You begin by becoming aware of the energy inside you so that you don't identify with your outer skin suit. You find the vitality and the energy of your whole inner self. You move into that energy body, pranamaya kosha, it's called in Sanskrit. It's the energy. That's the next dimension to pierce to as you go within. The pranamaya kosha, the breath body. That's why we put such an emphasis on breathing. With a breath, you can attain eternity. It's a door. So start with feeling the energy in your hands. That's got so many nerves in your hands. It's usually pretty easy to feel the energy in your hands. And practice it until you can feel all of your body. And periodically through the day, practice just stopping for a minute and being aware of that vitality of life moving within your skin suit. Begin to identify that as limitless space, spaciousness. Find that energetic presence, because you'll realize that its appearance in birth and its disappearance in death doesn't affect you at all. You're the energy. You're not the skin suit which you put on and take off like a suit of clothes. But you are that energy, and you are that awareness, and you are that witness of that energy, that Shakshi. So what happens is that the mind simply dissolves like fog in the sunlight. Awareness is like sunlight, and it simply dissolves the illusion of the mind. The egoic mind is dissolved by simply being attentive and aware to what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're feeling. You're constantly witnessing. And the witnessing awareness is what dissolves the illusion. How is the mind dissolved? The other techniques? Well, by discriminating between the real and the unreal. Is it real? Is it really real? Is it really, really real? Do you know that it's real? Do you know for a fact it's real? What do you know for an absolute fact is? Really? What do you know for an absolute fact? I thought about that. I realized, you know, the only thing I really know for an absolute fact is I am. I am. Which, of course, is a departure from reality, because am is consciousness of otherness. The I alone is. Everyone says I, regardless of the language. But when you follow it with something, then you enter into consciousness and differentiation. So even I am has to be transcended. So nothing real is threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Of Course in Miracles. Herein lies the peace of God. So everything that troubles us and worries us and gets us all upset is simply because we're trying to make something that never was real. And we're trying to hold on to it, to keep it from changing, keep it from leaving us, to keep perpetrating it. And we suffer because it's like trying to hold the waves back. They're going to roll on the shore. So it's an exercise in frustration. And if you look at the hidden fury and anger and resentment that, oh, golly, so many people are carrying around. They're like little seething cauldrons, just barely contained. And the slightest little thing can cause it to erupt. Road rage or spousal abuse or whatever. It's just barely covered with social propriety and convention, but barely. And sometimes it absolutely outs in a fury. And that's what Eckhart Tolle referred to as the pain body. But all of that is simply the ego trying to make something last in an impermanent world, trying to control and manipulate outcome. Give it up. It's not working. It's never going to work. Never has worked. never will work. It's not designed to work. If you could have fulfillment down here in the illusion, do you think you'd ever go for the reality? Of course not. So the very illusion has to keep you disillusioned in order for you to awaken beyond it. As long as you're happy and content with your life, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. You're going to keep coming back to be happy and content with your life. Next life, next life, next life. Oh, you like your spouse, you like your wife, you like your kids. Who said they were yours? Didn't Gibran say that our children are life's own longing for itself? They come through us, not to us. Gosh, I read that when I was 18 years old, and I thought, whoa, that's a profound thought. I wonder what it really means. It's that every soul is here for their own purposes, not for you. Your wife isn't here for you, your husband isn't here for you, and your kids are most definitely not here for you. As soon as they're old enough and have enough money, they're on. They want to live their own life. They want to discover their own reality. They don't want to be little replicas of you. You've already done you. They want to do who they are. So you got to let go. Let life's own longing for itself fulfill itself, however that shows up for that soul. But let your attention go to yourself. You got to ask yourself a question. Who am I? Behind and beyond the thinking mind and the feeling it gives rise to, who am I? Who is aware of the mind? Who is aware of feelings and impulses and desires and attractions and revulsions? I am aware of these, all of these things, so I cannot be those things. If I'm aware of those things, I can't be those things. So who is it that is aware? Who's conscious? Who is seeing through the eyes, listening, hearing? I'm not my eyes. I'm not my ears. I'm not even my tongue. I'm not my vocal cords. Who's seeing? Who's listening? Who's speaking? And I'm not my mind asking these questions. So who is it that's asking the questions? Who am I then? Who am I then? So finding that which is operating through one's fivefold body, one's mind and thinking patterns, one's instincts and impulses, that is the journey from ego mind to divine realization and awareness. That's it. That's the whole enchilada. So this inner scrutiny to discover the source of one's authentic being is what I mean when I tell you to stalk yourself like a puma stalking prey. And also to use your life like an alchemist, like a research scientist, busy uncovering the secrets of transmutation, transformation, transfiguration, and resurrection of mortal flesh into eternal life. Great mystery in that. Most people read the words, think it's a nice thing to read on Sunday or think about on Easter, but they're clueless that the enactment through Jesus the Christ of Nazareth was a prototype that they are to match and replicate in their own lives. So awareness is God, Atma, the Sakshi, the eternal witness. Awareness is life. Your real life begins only when you die to the mind, the ego, and are reborn of the spirit as eternal life. That's when the carnal, mortal flesh puts on the garment of light and enters life eternal. As what? As being, awareness, bliss, or Satchitananda. So until you are born of the spirit, you are really dead in illusion. The Bible refers to it as dead in sin. Same thing. Sin is an archery term that means missing the mark. You're missing the mark of eternal oneness with God and perfection. You're in sin, illusion, samsara, maya. You're like a dream figure, sleepwalking in your own mind. You are imprisoned in your mind and kept there only by lack of interest in getting free. You know, the old analogy that you got to want God as desperately as you want your next breath of air if somebody's holding your head underwater. And a person that's not fed up with the world, that still is getting or thinks they're getting some benefit from their experiences, and they're enjoying whatever, they're not ready to awaken. How can you tell you're in your last incarnation? I did a show on that a few weeks back. Primarily, when you are so one-track-minded on uncovering reality and truth, that you won't waste a minute doing anything else. Or even if you're doing something else to please someone or because you kind of have to, you're not really there. You're watching the world from a higher state. So you're in the movie, but you're not really listening to the movie or the dialogue. You could care less. All movies kind of have the same themes. Equally boring. But you're using it as a meditation to constantly remind yourself, all these figures are big nonsense. It's a play of color and light and sound and mood making and Hollywood and, you know, somebody's mind that made up the story. All a big baloney. So that you use the daily experiences as a meditation. Use everything to awaken. Everything is a stepping stone to your freedom. Stepping stone to God. But I don't like to use it that way because then you think God's outside of yourself. The only path is inside yourself, and the only God you'll ever find is yourself. Your own divine Atmic spirit is God. There is no other. There's no other at all. Wait until you get to the point when it all falls away and you find you're the only one in existence. Gosh, I had that realization when I was like 5, 6 years old. I thought, wow, I'm the only real thing here. Everything else is like not real. Why in the world would I have that realization as a child? Because I've had many, 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 many recent lifetimes as a yogi doing this stuff. So I came in with a very, very awakened sense of the divine. And a fear of the world, I might add, which is why I had to come back, obviously. I was afraid and resisting the world, trying to escape it through spiritual practice, probably. Probably had latent desires to travel and to see the world and come to America. Yeah, I was a Hindu guru, Brahmin, my last lifetime. It was Shirdi Sai Baba. Satya Sai Baba's previous incarnation. So, obviously, I came back to experience some stuff that still I had some attachment to. But from childhood, I was intent upon the scrutiny of reality. And it took different forms, but if you're in your last lifetime, you're going to be really, really, very one-pointed, very intentional, very on purpose, very intense. Very intense. I was such an intense child. I didn't like to play. I didn't like to waste time with kids playing silly games. I got away as far as I could from children and grown-ups. I used to climb high trees so I could get as far away from people as possible and as close to God as possible to think great thoughts. What is reality? Where is God? Where is the throne of God? What happens when people die? Where does that light that's in their eyes go when they glaze over in death? Why do people die? Why do cars crash? On my planet, Venus, we don't ever have crashing cars. We have like little bubble craft that are like the Jetsons, and they have force fields around them, and they never crash. I remembered that as a child. What did you remember as a child? What was your very first impression of self? Many of you listening, I think, that are devoted listeners, are yogis. You're recognizing what I'm sharing each week because these are thoughts you've had and you haven't had anybody that could give voice to them. So you like what I have to say because you recognize that it's truth. And so you keep tuning in week after week. When you've gone as far as I can take you, you'll stop listening. Somebody else will come that maybe it's just the right timing to hear that particular seminar. But it's for you. It's for you who really are intent upon awakening, knowing the truth, stepping free. The teachings I give you each week are from my great guru, Sai Baba, who himself led me to realization, who himself taught me and merged me into him. So merge, merge, merge with your beloved. Merge with God. Awaken and find that you are your own Ishta Devata, your own chosen form of God, be it Christ or Buddha or Sai Baba or Krishna or Rama, whoever. The Shab, the divine word, whatever you merge with is who you are, it's what you are, the Ek, it's you. You are the you, you are the Ek, you are the spiritual traveler, you are the Mahanta, you are the Avatar, you are the It of itself, you are the Absolute, you are the Shakti, the eternal witness. So if this world has lost all its allure and charm, you are probably miserable, desperate, and depressed. Hallelujah! You're ready to awaken. You're ready to awaken. To get free from the incessant chatter of your absolutely insane, egoic, conceptualized mind and the self it projects as your identity. Ever want to get away from yourself? Good luck. The only thing you can get rid of is your monkey mind by dissolving it in awareness. It can't stand to be looked at. You ever notice people, if you get too close with the truth, they want to turn on the TV, they fall asleep, they change the subject, they get scared and threatened, they never call you again, they break off the engagement, they run, in other words, because they're not ready. They're not ready to awaken. Nobody can live with a person who's awake and stay asleep. If they're not willing to awaken, there will be a parting of the ways. So don't hold on to people. Let them go. God has companions to walk with you every step of your journey. People come. People go. They are simply mirrors to show you something you need to see in yourself. That's all. Look at everyone as a mirror. So there's nowhere to escape from one who's imprisoned in the mind but by directing your mind to inner inquiry. Vicharana, it's called in Sanskrit. Vicharana, inner inquiry. Viragya, discriminating between the real and the unreal, and learning to observe your thoughts and feelings without acting upon them. Can you just watch them and observe them without having to follow through on them? You become the objective observer and witness. And you control and direct yourself if and when action is necessary. So spiritual practice called sadhana, an intense fiery effort called tapas, or sometimes it's called austerities or sacrifice. What do you sacrifice? Your ego, your selfishness, your opinions, your comfort. Comfort is death. Always keep yourself uncomfortable. Always. If you don't, something greater than you within you will. So the course in which you direct your mind in action needs to flow along certain time-tested tracks. This applies to everyone. Number one is just a basic fundamental thing. Is that you have to be intentional as you start your day. You have to be intentional. What's intentional? Calling yourself forward with a deep breath and making connection with the divine. And integrating that part of you. In the morning, before you put your slippers on and start your day, get inside your body. Inhabit. Inhabit your skin suit. And get in touch with the energy that is who you are inhabiting this temporary skin suit. Get in touch with the energy. Feel everything. Feel the vastness and the spaciousness and the timeless eternality of your own being. And come into a conscious alignment with the divine spirit for your day. Some people call that prayer, but prayer is sometimes way too passive. Don't just state what you want. Evoke it. Call it forward. Embody, inhabit it. Don't just do passive prayers. I think most of you are beyond that anyway. Every thought, you know, really is a prayer. God listens to your heart, not your lips. So your heart is praying all the day long. And the desires of your heart, whatever they are, will be fulfilled. The next thing is you need to practice daily meditation. There has to be some form of quiet time, but not just meditating. You also need to study. You need to study the books written by enlightened and self-realized, God-realized men and women. And when you read, you need to accompany that by ruminating over what you've read, turning it over in your mind, applying it to yourself, contemplating. How does this apply to me? Where am I in this? What is my understanding? Really important. And then, daily intentional integration, daily meditation and quiet time, daily study. Then it's important to keep regular company with those who are also on a God-focused path. It's called satsang. And avoiding bad company. We become like those we keep company with. So, reading the books of the wise and holy also serves as good company. Reading novels or watching TV filled with lust and crime and stupid stuff is like keeping bad company. So, watch what you put into your mind. Because that goes through your eye gates right into your heart, and out of your heart you speak. And out of your thoughts and your heart you act, which will lead you to absolute ruin and return, or realization, and you decide. You decide. As the mind is directed, so the behavior will follow. As the behavior, so the results. You said you wanted God. Could I tell that if I followed you around from morning to night? Could I tell by your actions and your words and what you read and what you watch and what you talk about that you really want God? That's what you have to ask yourself. You have to look at your life. Am I truly a seeker of truth, or am I a big BS artist? Am I just playing a game? If you're serious, you'll take a look, and you'll have the courage to look and to call it what it is. But don't fool yourself. You can't lie to God who dwells in your heart. In you as you, everything is revealed. So your life is your message, your life is your sadhana, your life is your practice. Your life is entirely of your making. What are you going to make of it? Ruin and return, or realization? Your mind will determine the results, depending on where you direct it. So let's go out chanting, Shalom Anayu. Deep breath. Shalom Anayu. Shalom Anayu. Shalom Anayu. And put your hands on your own head and bless yourself. Bless your life. Bless your mind. Bless your heart. Bless the space you occupy. Bless the people who occupy the space with you. Bless your walk. Bless your talk. Let everything that comes from your intention be one of blessing. And may the blessing of the all that is be upon each one of you. Baruch Hashem Adonai. Blessed is the name of the Lord Adonai.